Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Houseplants are not a new trend. Think back to the spider plants in the 1970s and 80s and ficus and orchids of the 1990s. But what has changed is the number and age of people buying houseplants. According to the National Gardening Association, in April of 2019, houseplant sales in the U.S. had increased 50% over the previous 3 years to a whopping $1.7 billion. Today, we're talking about this growing enthusiasm for houseplants, and with us is Marcia Potash. She's a lifelong gardener who's been working at greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years, the last 20 of which have been with indoor and tropical plants. Marcia, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So national statistics point to this growing popularity of houseplants. Are you seeing the trend here on the Cape? Is that what you see as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've been doing this, as you said, for about like 20 years. I started taking care of the houseplant and tropical area back in 1997. For a while, it was very, very flat. And in the last, I would say the last four or five years, I've seen more and more younger people, the younger millennials, coming in looking for houseplants. So it's the most exciting thing to come along and just really, it's just really boosted things, especially this time of year in the winter. Yeah. People are looking for houseplants. They're
looking for a little color.
They're looking for a little color, a little greenness, a little fresh air. The air feels great. The sun is out today. I'll be heading back to work and I'll be enjoying the sunshine.
So the big change then is that you're seeing more younger people coming in and being interested in houseplants.
Yes.
Yeah. Do we know why?
I think because a lot of the younger people, they're renting, they're putting off having families. Sometimes they're in a condominium or an apartment where they don't allow pets, but certainly, fine to have houseplants, and you can have as many as you want. Plus, it gives them something to care for and nurture. Bring in the outdoors inside because a lot of them don't have yards
right.
or a place where they can grow things outside. So their gardens are inside. Plus, a lot of it has to do with social media, Instagram.
Yeah. I didn't realize this, but evidently there's this whole, world of houseplants and young people and what would they call influencers, right? That influence kind of what the trends are?
Yes. There's certain plants. I was just reading about what plants are going to be trendy for 2020. And I hate the word trend when it comes to houseplants because I think houseplants should transcend trends. They should be a necessity because of all the benefits they bring to our interior space. I recently had a young man that was going off to prep school, and I spent quite a long time with him and his mother because he was looking for a plant that he could put next to his desk, and he wanted to be able to sit and do his work, study, reading under the canopy of the plant. And later on, I was looking up something about houseplants and how they increase your memory retention and your focus. And they have a calming effect. So he must have read the same thing. He didn't quite find the plant that he wanted. But anyway.
That's under the canopy. That sounds like a big plant. So what are some of the health benefits of having houseplants?
The health benefits, well, back in 1989, NASA did a study on houseplants. And I have been going by that study. In fact, I have a book in my greenhouse that I share with people. I share pages from it when they leave the greenhouse with their plant. They have part of the NASA study about their plant and how effective it is for reducing chemical emissions that come from all kinds of things, from paint, from furniture, our rugs, formaldehyde, toluene, benzene.
Wow.
But the study was done in small, airtight rooms using plants, one particular plant. And it was amazing. It was amazing how many emissions were reduced.
And you said one type of plant. Is it anything that's green, or does it have to be a certain type?
Well, there's some that are better than others, and there's some that do different things. Like some are better, like a spider plant is better at reducing formaldehyde in the atmosphere. So they all have their specialties, but you would need a lot of them because they didn't further the study and do it in a realistic, interior, like in a house, they were doing it, you know, as scientists will go. Yeah. They just kind of got that information and ran with it, and people started running to the plant store. But still, they still have benefits. One of the things that's most important to remember about houseplants and houseplants in the home is that they take in carbon dioxide and release oxygen. But when the sun sets and the photosynthesis ends, they do the reverse.
Oh, interesting. My
mother-in-law told me that it wasn't good to have. I had too many plants in my bedroom, and she must have read something about how, like, plants like use up oxygen at night. But there are plants that actually at night, and they're called the bedroom plants because they do the opposite.
All right, give us an example. What's a bedroom plant?
A bedroom plant would be something that takes in carbon dioxide and releases oxygen at night. And those would be your succulents, your orchids, things like snake plant, cactus, bromeliads.
Wow, who knew?
Yeah.
So this idea that we always hear houseplants improve indoor air quality, it's true.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. It's, you know, opening a window is probably a better way to bring fresh air or, you know, air conditioning unit.
Not when it's cold like this.
But you're not opening windows this time of year.
Yeah. All right, 866-999-4626 is our number for your questions about houseplants this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Katie's asking, what about, what is this, anthurium as a bedroom?
Anthurium as a bedroom plant. Anthurium probably wouldn't be as good a choice as a sansevieria or a snake plant or mother-in-law tongue. You have to remember, plants have a lot of common names, and I like to refer to them with their botanical name, but people are more comfortable with the common names.
We can remember that.
And there are a lot of different styles now of sansevieria, and to me they're like a living sculpture. And the best thing about all the sansevierias is they require a minimum of care, and they really don't care where you put them as long as you don't put them in a closet. They'll take low light, they'll take high light, anything in between. Some of them only need to be watered monthly. So that makes it a very, very easy plant, and it's the one I usually direct first time houseplant.
Right. You were saying you mentioned that you often get young people come in and say, I kill everything, but I want to have green plants, right? And you try and help them out.
Yes.
And that would be one of the ways. You start them with something easy.
I start them with something that would be really hard to kill. Mm. And things like the golden pothos, you know, the sansevieria. I steer them in the right direction of plants that I know that they probably can keep alive, and don't start with a maidenhair fern by all means. Or I know that gardenia is really beautiful.
Oh boy.
But yeah.
And the gardenia.
Success is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
Once you're successful with one plant, they'll move on to, you know, something a little bit more challenging.
Yeah. So now you mentioned some of the positive effects. Are there negative effects from plants? I'm thinking, you know, if you had some mold on the soil or, you know, dust accumulated on the plant. I mean, does that create any problems or no?
No, you won't. You do want to dust and clean the leaves from time to time, especially on those big philodendrons. The philodendron monstera are just a very popular plant right now with the young people, as is the fiddle leaf flake. And they do collect dust, and that's why I sometimes recommend putting plants outside for the summer season and give them a bit of summer camp. It really helps clean them
up. Absolutely.
But I don't think it's really a problem. the molds, and you know, unless you really keep a plant too wet, you're not going to have a problem with mold. Also, too, as long as you're using a potting soil that is not, you know, like compost or mm-hmm. something from outside, you're not going to be bringing things like that inside.
You mentioned orchids, and orchids are always popular. And I have a beautiful orchid, and I don't remember what kind it is, but I got it from the orchid lady on Martha's Vineyard, who's always at the farmer's market there. And she was great. They're beautiful. And I thought, how do you keep these things so gorgeous? And she was saying to get them to rebloom, sometimes you have to shock them a little.
Yeah.
Like she says, like put them in a window where the temperature's a bit cooler or, you know, and she's right. So this one that she suggested, and I don't remember what it's called. It does, but I put it outside in the summer and that somehow prompts it to bloom again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But some of those, the more common ones that we see a lot, they sometimes can be difficult to get to rebloom.
The phalaenopsis, yes.
So what do you give people tips on that?
Location, location, location.
Oh, okay.
It seems like some people have just incredible success. And when I ask them where their orchids are positioned in the home, it's usually a bay window.
A bay window, okay.
A bay window where they're getting light from different angles.
Yeah.
Also, too, a drop in temperature in the night. Mm-hmm. That's really key for getting a phalaenopsis or moth orchid to respike and bloom.
I bought a phalaenopsis just because it's so beautiful and it was at the right price. And it's, you know, it's got these beautiful flowers. And I'm thinking, oh boy, am I ever going to get this to rebloom again? So I should put it in the bay window, huh?
Mm-hmm. If you're lucky enough to have a bay window.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I have my amaryllis, which I have pretty good luck with that. They're pretty easy too, right?
Not always. Well, there's a difference between an amaryllis. An amaryllis that you buy that's bare root, meaning it hasn't been forced, is mm-hmm. easier to get to rebloom again than ones that have already started and then started spiking for some reason. I think it's the way they're treated.
Mm-hmm.
Also, too, the bare root amaryllis that you buy are usually larger, so they can store more. You have to realize the leaves on an amaryllis, you have to leave the leaves on for mm-hmm. a certain amount of time because that's the food for the amaryllis.
Right. So we have Catherine is asking, the cats have claimed the only window shelves that get southern sunlight in the winter. Anything in the room with them would be eaten. What would you recommend as a low-light houseplant for somewhere else in the house?
Okay, yeah, kitties can be a problem. That's one of my most asked questions. What's safe for cats? Tropical plants evolved to be a bit toxic because there's so much competition out there between the birds and the insects and the monkeys all wanting to eat them that they all produced a bit of toxin, so not too much could be eaten at one time.
So stay away from the tropicals.
But there are some tropicals that are safe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The MSPCA has a great list. The ones that come to mind that are usually safe for cats would be a fern, mm-hmm. but stay away from the asparagus fern because that would be toxic to a cat. Also, the palms, for the most part, are safe.
Mm-hmm.
And the one palm in particular that comes to mind is what they call a Neantha bella palm or Pala palm. They're the smallest of all the palms. You can find them in all sizes, anything from like a 2-inch all the way up to 8 or 10 inch. They grow very slowly. They're very dense and green.
And they don't need a ton of light?
They do not need a lot of light. No, wow. They grow in very low light. It's the only palm that just really flourishes in low light.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a very graceful look. Also, too, they don't outgrow their position quickly. Mm-hmm. Some palms just get too big.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Peter, who's giving us a call from Yarmouth. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. It's good to hear your guest. I have two avocado plants that are growing quite tall, and I wondered whether they were a living room plant or a bedroom plant, and any advice your guest would have about avocados.
I wouldn't consider them necessarily because they're a foliage plant, and most of the bedroom plants are succulents, although lavender is great, or any plant with fragrance because of the fragrance for the bedroom, which helps you relax. But avocados, they need good light. They want to be a treat. I feel like avocados, I know people love to grow them, and they love that whole process, and I just really embrace that. But they can get to be a little bit ungainly. They don't naturally produce side shoots and limb. You can cut them back. But they're never going to be a really dense, full. They want to be a tree. They want to be in Southern California. I had one in my yard there.
And they're just high, and the other I have is 4 feet high.
Wow. So I guess you have room in your living room, Peter? Sounds like a living room plant.
Yeah, sounds like a living room plant. You want to give it some space.
Should they be put out in the summertime?
Absolutely. I'm all for it. I've told people, you know, there's no such thing as a house plant. All these plants grew somewhere outside. Plants now have been hybridized. What makes a house plant actually is a plant that is comfortable as we would be in temperatures, you know, year-round. It doesn't need a dormant period like a peony. There's some plants we can bring from outside and they can adapt. But house plants is just a plant that adapts well in an indoor environment.
All right, Peter, thanks for that question. That was a good one. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more on houseplants after a break. You're listening to The Point, and we're talking about this growing enthusiasm for houseplants. And with us is Marcia Potash, lifelong gardener. She's been working at greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years. 866-999-4626 is our number for your questions about houseplants. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So Peter was asking you about bringing the avocado outside and any of the plants that we are going to, obviously we're not going to bring them outside now, but when we do, do you have to harden them off a little bit? You don't bring them out into bright sunshine, right? When we do bring them out, we want to start doing that when it's a little warmer, as you're saying, when we're comfortable outside the plant might be, is that right?
The rule of thumb is waiting until the nights are above 50 degrees consistently. The same as you would have with basil. I always say, don't plant basil outside until it's, you know, consistently above 50 degrees. Also, too, you don't really want to put anything abruptly. There's very few that will take full sunshine. Yeah. You know, you want to have some dappled shade or someplace where they're protected from, especially afternoon sun, that would quickly burn the leaves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, get into trouble with that. Right. By moving a plant out into the sun or just giving it a day in the sun. No.
Okay.
Don't do it. Don't be tempted.
Right. Let's talk to Pat, who's calling from Dennis. Hi, Pat.
Good morning, Mindy. How are you?
Good.
Good. I have a question for your person here. I have a plant, which I don't like this name. I'm hoping there's a common name. I have a Clivia. It's quite old. It's quite large. I haven't seen it bloom. I think it got a single bloom 3 years ago. 1 year I took it out to the shady part of the garden, and it bloomed pretty nicely, but it's been years. And I'm wondering if I've got the wrong light conditions or what maybe I could do to encourage it.
Okay. Clivia, yes, Clivia can outlive us. It's one of those plants we pass down. I call the generational plants. They're virtually indestructible. But what you need to do to get it to bloom, you have to give it some harsh treatment. Mm-hmm. Okay, right now my Clivia is in a unheated bedroom in a north-facing window. It needs a minimum of water. You really want to give it a what they call a winter rest, because that is what produces the blooms. Without that winter rest, if you get any bloom at all, or just a few, or just one, it's because it didn't have a proper winter rest. So from November on until, you know, they start kind of, I'm waiting. What I do with mine is like about in February or near the end of February, I'll start going up there and looking at it to see if it's starting to produce buds. And, you know, usually it is. I've also, too, if you don't have like a cold bedroom, I've also used a basement. They can take it down to 45. In fact, I have an interesting story about a Clivia that my garden center, they took in for somebody that was going down to Florida for the winter, and we offered to take care of their very old Clivia. Well, it got left in a greenhouse. It was unheated, and the whole thing froze. And I felt very dismayed, thinking ahead of how I'm going to tell this person that their Clivia froze to death. Well, I was back there in April. We had already given up on it. And all of a sudden, I see orange in the distance. In this Clivia, whose foliage had just frozen and died back, was blooming. So I brought it into the greenhouse. The whole thing
came back.
Wow. So they are tough.
I'm so glad you called and asked this, because I have a Clivia too. And it is not, I have a cold bedroom. I'm going to move it to the cold bedroom.
Needs the cold.
Yes, I did not know that. So thank you. Thanks for asking that question, Pat.
Yeah, I have moved it because my sister's bloomed. So I tried to copy her light conditions. Hers bloomed, but at an odd time, like November. So I have it in a southern window, in a medium, not cold at all bedroom. Yeah. I am going to whisk that thing down to the basement where it gets. I've got lights. I've got some grow lights for other plants, so I'll keep it.
Yeah, they don't mind the dark. They really don't. Right. I mean, not total dark, but they don't mind it. Very, very shady.
I think we need some more Clivia. You can't destroy it, right? Thanks for the call, Pat. Appreciate that. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Charlotte is calling from Pocasset. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I'm calling with a jade plant question. I'm a new houseplant fanatic, I guess you could call me. I inherited a plant from a family friend that it had been thriving, but now it seems the new growth is growing downwards rather than up. And I don't know why that's happening.
Okay, that's happening because it is not getting quite enough light. They also sometimes will do that even if they're getting light. If it's an older plant, I've seen them do that. When they're young, they grow up and erect. As they get older, they might cascade. But if the growth is kind of weak and leggy looking, it means it's just not in the right location. It needs a bit more light.
Yeah, I have it in a sunny window, but it might just not be quite enough sun then.
You can also give that a trim, too. Come spring, usually you want to trim things going to the growing season. The growing season starts as our day length gets longer. And those are easy to trim up, and you'll be rewarded with just, you know, new sprouts and more sprouts. But if it has any leggy, you know, stretched out growth, don't be afraid to trim that away.
Charlotte, good luck with that.
Thanks
for the call. Now, you were telling me before we came on the air that they're, especially with some of the millennials, they get really emotionally attached to name the plants sometimes, right?
It's not just the millennials that get attached to plants.
Oh, everybody, right?
Everybody, really. I think plants, when you bring a plant and you're caring for it, you have empathy for it. I've had people near tears because a special plant that was given to them by a friend or a deceased relative, they were killing. And they just, you know, even though I felt the odds were that this plant wouldn't make it, I said, well, you should have really come sooner before the plant got to this condition. But they just really feel compassion and they feel that connection. It's very strong with plants. It's just kind of incredible sometimes. And I really have to be very sensitive and helpful. You know, no matter how I feel about it, I have to understand where those feelings to come from, those deep feelings and that connection to that plant.
You know, it's funny because my niece had put something up on her Facebook page about a plant. It looked like she hadn't watered it in a while or maybe overwatered it. And she was so distraught. And I thought, why don't you just go buy another one? But, you know, the same thing. She was so, I don't know what it was about that particular plant, but she was pretty distraught. Luckily, it did come back, and so it wasn't dying. Uh-huh. But would you say that overwatering is probably the biggest mistake people make with houseplants?
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. Uh-huh. Yeah, it is. Think of it, think of all living things. If they get submerged in water and they're not fish or mollusks, they're going to drown.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens to a plant. Too much water, the roots can't bring up oxygen to the plant, so the plant is oxygen deprived, and what follows is the roots just start to rot and die off.
Yeah.
So a plant that doesn't dry out is in trouble. Yeah. It's on the way to death's door.
So do you recommend people, you know, I have a little moisture thing that you can...
Moisture meter.
Yeah, that you just stick in there and it tells you. And sometimes, you know, I don't always use it. Usually I just stick my finger in there. But sometimes I think, oh, this plant doesn't need water. And I stick it in there and I go, oh, you know, like, for example, now when the heat, you know, my uncle was visiting. So we had the heat up a little higher than normal. And I had to water the plants a little more than I usually do. So those things are really worth the couple of bucks that it costs, right?
I think a lot of people feel a little bit more confident using them.
Yeah.
I'm just a finger person. Plus, I can just tell by a plant. Some plants scream at you.
Yeah, they sort of start to wilt. Like, I need water.
A peace lily in particular tells you when it needs water.
Yeah.
But the rule of thumb is... They say less water in the winter, but my experience is I water a lot more. I water my houseplants a lot more in the winter. I heat with the wood stove. The air is dry. Plants, their transpiration rate, which is how quickly they're losing moisture, is much higher.
Because of the heat, yeah.
Because of the dryness and the heat in the air.
Let's talk to Jennifer, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Mindy. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a hibiscus that I started years and years ago from a cutting, and it's been growing longer and taller. And I brought it into the room that has a cathedral ceiling, and it was fine, and suddenly it started to heal over. And I realized I have to cut it back, but I wondered when and if there's any advice on how.
Oh, yeah, you can get pretty drastic with hibiscus. you want to... I was earlier talking about the growing season as the day length gets longer, and probably the most advantageous time to cut back a hibiscus is probably sometime in March. You don't want to wait too long, because if you wait too long, you're going to cut back growth that is going to take forever to bloom. I mean, I once let a hibiscus go completely dormant. And I could bring it back, but it didn't bloom until almost October. So that's just the drawback of that. But it definitely will improve the look and the health of your hibiscus if you give it a pruning. And you can go back, I would say you could probably go back to 1/3 to 1/2. It's not going to hurt. And then you can start feeding. Usually they say to feed hibiscus only when they're really actively growing and starting to set buds. And that's probably a good idea. In general, you feed plants far, far less during the winter months or during the shorter day length.
About maybe 8 feet tall. Oh. And I'm not sure 1/3 back is going to
Is going to help. Is it a standard form? Is it? You said you started it from a cutting. Does it have a trunk or is it more of a bush?
If it's
that big, I definitely would go back more. You could take that down by half.
Okay.
As long as you don't take off too many leaves, because it's going to need some leaves to photosynthesize. But even if you do take a lot of leaves, it will still grow new ones. I've seen them like just really flesh out from almost the base.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks,
Jennifer.
All right,
I'll go forward with confidence. Yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Alden is calling from Nantucket. Hi, Alden.
Hi, Fran. I have a quick question. I have a dwarf babaco papaya, which is like a mountain region papaya species that can stand a lot more cold and stays short. But I've got a lot of scale on it of some sort, like a brown scale, and I'm wondering what you would do to treat that.
No, scale, yeah.
Yeah, nobody likes scale.
Well, mealybug is my number one enemy, but scale, the best way to remove scale is manually. I would suggest getting like a little rag or even a paper towel or a soft sponge, soaping it up with something like I've usually used Murphy's oil soap or Dr. Bromer's peppermint or eucalyptus soap, and just kind of giving it a shampoo in removing it, because even if you spray something on it, and most insecticides don't work on scale because of the armor. Is it sticky? Do you have a lot of stickiness?
There's no ants either, so it's not doing the that thing yet.
Because scale, a sure sign that you have scale in your plant is you get a lot of stickiness, which is the honeydew, which the scale insect secretes. You know, that's the first thing I'll ask if somebody said, you know, if they have stickiness around the plant or on the floor.
Yeah.
But manually removing that and then maybe going over it with a horticultural oil, like all season oil, probably is the most effective way. And just keeping an eye on it. It can be hard to lick because scale can stick to it can stick to the woody part of the plant as well as the leaves.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Good luck, Alden.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And now we were talking about kind of this emotional attachment that people have to the plants, but there's also sort of this using it as an interior design, right? I mean, people want the plants to as part of their decor.
Mm-hmm.
So do people come in and ask you with how to help out with that? Like we had the guy said, is this a living room plant or a bedroom plant?
that's a big part of it, is designing with houseplants in what rooms do certain houseplants do better. A lot of it has to do with where your light source is coming from. A lot of people are now investing in grow lamps so that they can have plants in a corner, you know, away from windows. But design does come. You don't want too much of a jungly look. You just really want to enhance your area and have the plants work together and look well together. Yeah. Bunches of plants just grouped up.
Isn't, like you're in the jungle, right?
That's right. And isn't the, always that attractive.
And the other thing that seems to be pretty popular now are these little fairy gardens or like terrariums, right? I mean, everywhere you go, they're selling all this, like, you know, little miniature things to decorate. And this is not, I mean, we would think kids, right, do this, but this is not just kids who are doing these gardens, right?
It's not just kids. I've been doing the fairy garden workshops at my garden center now for many, many years. It's kind of slacked off a bit, the popularity. I think it's a wonderful way, a very whimsical way. I call it dollhouses for gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great way to introduce children and get children interested in plants and caring for them.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of plants at our garden center. We have a whole line of plants that have just been cultivated and grown for the fairy gardening. And those are fun. Not everybody that buys them, you know, uses them in a fairy garden, but they certainly go into miniature gardening as well.
I mentioned we have a fairy garden, my grandson that wanted a fairy garden, but he said no fairies and no dragons. So the dragons were scary enough, but he has a Venus flytrap is one of the plants that he wanted in there. And it is. It's kind of fun to to watch. But those are, and they were quite a market. Those things are expensive. The little, you know, like the little bench and the little gnome and the things. I was amazed at how much they cost.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Alana, who's calling from Mashpee. Good morning, Alana.
Good morning. I have a donkey's tail and I'm moving. And I wonder if you have any suggestions as to how I can move it.
Ouch. Donkey's tail's moving.
Exactly.
That's always a problem, moving plants. When you think of nature, plants don't, you know, generally uproot themselves. And the longer a plant has been where it has been and how well it's doing, it still resents a move. And barrel's tail or donkey's tail in particular, because it seems if you sneeze next to it, it's going to lose some of its leaves.
Right.
So that, so are you moving? How are you transporting it? Is it going?
I have no idea.
Okay. I mean, how far is it moving away? Do you need to?
It's an hour and 20 minutes away.
Oh, all you could do is maybe surround it, you know, set it in a box or something and surround it with peanuts. I don't know. That's a tricky one. You're gonna lose some of those.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
All right, I appreciate it.
Good luck. Thanks, Alana.
866-999-4626
is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more on houseplants after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the growing enthusiasm for houseplants. With us is Marcia Potash, a lifelong gardener who's been working at greenhouses and nurseries for more than 30 years. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jenny says, I enjoy forcing bulbs such as paper whites and mini daffodils and hyacinth. After they bloom, I'd like to keep them semi-dormant until it warms up outdoors and I can put them in the ground for the future. What do you think?
That's a great idea. And I often tell people, even though this hyacinth looks like it's falling over in its passive bloom, you can still plant it outside. You just wait for the ground to be soft enough, usually like by April, even the end of March, depending upon how our spring is on the Cape, which is always very up in the air. The paper whites are a more tropical temperate climate, and those are not going to come back. But certainly any of the daffodils and the hyacinths, the crocus,
primrose,
the iris, the primrose too, can be planted outside. They're not long-lasting, but some do very well if you find a good location for them.
Right. All right. Let's talk to Cindy, who's calling from West Tisbury. Hi, Cindy.
Oh, hi, Mindy. Yes, thank you. I have a prayer plant that I've had for many years, but the leaves get brown on the edges, and I can't figure out what that is because I've done less watering, and then I thought, well, maybe it needs more watering, and changed the location, thinking it needed more shade or sun, and nothing's helped it. Is it the soil, or what could it be?
No, that is just, that is one of the prayer plant characteristics, is that especially during the winter when the air is much drier, plants have something, transpiration rate, and that's moisture lost through the leaves. And it's usually the edges or the tips of the leaves. That's where you see the browning. If the plant dries out too often, you want to make sure that plant is evenly moist, because if it loses moisture and can't replace the moisture, you're going to have the brown edges. Providing a humidity tray probably is your best bet, just to raise the humidity level around it, just to slow down that transpiration rate. But it's fairly common, even in a greenhouse, for it to get the brown edges. You just don't want it to get out of hand. It usually occurs with some of the older leaves, too, but it can occur with the younger leaves. But did you know that it's a real trendy plant right now, too, for the year 2020?
Oh, it's a trendy plant.
Plants with interesting foliage, but it does have beautiful foliage, and they can get quite beautiful and big.
And they fold up at night.
Yes.
It's
a charmer.
Yeah,
it is. So, and I did take a cutting from it and made another baby plant, and this baby one's really, you know, got the brown. So would putting it in a bowl of water help it? Would that work?
You don't want to have plant roots wet
then,
all the time. No, that's
right.
All right. Cindy, good luck.
Okay, I'll make sure that keeps moist. Thank you so much.
Sure. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. When do you know it's time to repot an indoor plant, and what are the steps for doing that correctly? Because different plants, some like to be root bound, some not so much. So, as you've had this plant for a while, do you always have to repot it, or, how do you know?
My rule of thumb for telling if a plant is to be repotted, of course, some plants grow faster and their roots expand much faster, for instance, like a spider plant. But then on the other hand, things like succulents have a very slow growing root system. Plants, for the most part, tropical plants really don't mind being root bound. But if it gets to the point where you're having to say to the plant, didn't I just water you and you're dry again? It means that the roots have filled out the whole soil area in that pot. If you take a plant out of a pot and examine the root system. It doesn't hurt to just slip a plant. You know, some won't come very easily, and they're really tight. You know, it means that, or they're expanding the sides of the pots, or the roots are coming through the bottom. Usually I just check with my finger. If I can push my finger down and it easily goes into the soil, it means the roots haven't filled out the pot yet. But those are some of the signals that it's time to repot. Also, being really careful, and I emphasize this so much with my customers and guests that I work with at the garden center, not to overpot. People think bigger is better, will grow faster, stronger. The opposite is true. In some plants in particular will kind of up and die.
If there's too much space. Yeah.
If there's too much space. It's almost like they like the security of feeling something around them or something. They like to have tight pants. Be careful about repotting.
Yeah. Now, if your plant is growing too big for a pot and you don't have the space to get a bigger pot, can you divide it? I mean, are some plants you can and some plants you can't,
right? Some plants you can divide, or sometimes if a plant has just become ungainly, I always say to you, if it doesn't make you feel happy when you look at it, it's time to do something about it. And if you're, you know, if you just really want to keep that plant, you can take cuttings. That's true of a lot of plants where you can just grow it from a few new leaves and just start over again. Some plants don't divide well. I once tried to divide up, talk about empathy for a plant. This young lady brought a peace lily that had been her mother's, who recently passed, and she wanted to share that peace lily with her brothers and sisters. Well, there were six of them. And I told her I can only give it maybe a 30% chance of surviving. This plant really doesn't take well to being divided. There's certain plants that just don't.
Yeah. Now, do you see the as younger people are starting with houseplants, are they expanding to outdoor gardens, you know, growing vegetables and things like that, or is it pretty much just the houseplants? I know we mentioned that a lot of people living in apartments and condominiums maybe don't have the space, but I don't know, it seems like you look at some of these patios and everybody's got their tomato plant or their carrots or something. Do you think it inspires them to look at outdoor gardening as well, or is it pretty much just an indoor thing?
I think the indoor thing comes with people that are just in closed spaces and cities. It's a real urban thing where there just isn't an opportunity unless it's a community garden. I don't see why it wouldn't, though, because once they become confident and hooked, I think they'll just continue on. And a lot of people just want to grow things that they can consume, too.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you were telling me that a lot of the people who come in looking for are men.
Yes.
More men than women, which I don't know why I found that surprising. But yeah, they're coming in saying, okay, what's a good bedroom plant? What's a good living room plant?
Yes, they're coming in with their lists and for plants that, you know, they want to freshen up the air, or maybe they're smokers and they just really want to improve the air quality.
Yeah. All right. So Marianne sent us a note. She says, I usually put my amaryllis outside in the summer. They die back in the fall, then rebloom midwinter. But this fall, they didn't fully die back, and now I have grown one or two leaves, no bud. Should I just wait till next year? Is there a trick to getting them to fully die back for the rest for their rest in the fall?
I don't know what's going to happen at this point. It's producing leaves. Sometimes if the leaves stay on green too long, sometimes you could just take them off, just cut them off. Sometimes it will take them a long time to die back on their own, I have found. So sometimes you can just give them a haircut and take away the leaves, and that will force it into a dormancy. But now once it's produced leaves like that, it's very unlikely that it's going to produce a bud. So my feeling was it probably didn't build enough energy to produce a flower inside, because they do that over the winter. Over the summer months. But those leaves, you have to think of those leaves on your amaryllis as food for the plant. And they are what builds up the bulb and what gives it its energy to bloom again the following season.
And one of the things I do with my amaryllis, once it dies back, I put them in the basement. I just leave them there, and I don't start watering them until the bud comes up. And then I water them and bring them upstairs and put them in the sunny window.
You're doing the correct thing, You wait for that bud to appear. I once had one in the basement for, I think, maybe 3 years because I forgot about it. And you know what? I was down there cleaning out that section of the basement. And sure enough, there was a little bud trying to emerge. I brought it upstairs, and I got like 4 blooms on it. So.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing how
it was a long dormancy.
Yeah. The variety, too, of all the different colors. And I mean, it used to be just I only would see red amaryllis. Now you have pink and white and, you know, red and orange. It's just amazing.
Yeah, there's some dwarf and small flowering ones, too. Yeah, they're amazing. There are doubles, too, that actually look like a peony. They're really beautiful. Yeah.
When we're talking about, you know, sort of this emotional attachment we get to some of our plants, my 96-year-old uncle lives in New York City, and he is just in love with orchids. He says it's like having a pet, which I thought was really funny. But he says he just, when he walks into his den or, you know, in the hall and there's that, you know, happy face of the orchid, it makes him feel like he has company, which and a lot of people really feel that way about their plants, don't they?
They do. Looking at a plant makes you feel good. Makes you feel calmer. Makes you feel like you have something there, that you're not so lonely if you have your plants there. They're almost like become like friends. That's why they say that people talking to their plants, there's something in that mm-hmm. actually the plants enjoy the carbon dioxide.
Oh, yeah, so
that you're giving them.
That's
so
funny.
There is something to talking to plants. A lot of people name their plants, too. At our garden center, we have a plant that we took in about 3 years ago because this couple were moving to a much smaller place. It was a philodendron salome. It was pretty large when we took it in, and since then it's probably quadrupled in size. It's about ready to take over. But they visited.
Oh, that's funny.
They're off Cape now, but anytime they come to the Cape, they come by and see their philodendron and seeing how beautiful it's doing.
Oh, that's funny.
And we do have a name for it. It's called Medusa because it produces these very long, long roots that will just like, they'll go everywhere unless you control them.
So for folks who are just getting started with houseplants, give us some tips and maybe some ideas on a couple of plants we could start with.
Okay. I think the first one to start with probably is a philodendron. I know I point that out to people and usually say, I already have one of those. But for people that don't, it's a great one to start with because it's so easy and long-lived. It's very forgiving. It doesn't like to go extremely dry, but just a moderate amount of water. It also, too, doesn't mind dry air, which makes it a great plant. That's why you see it in so many public places, because it holds up under adverse, you know, situations. So that's a good one to start with. You know, it's not the most maybe interesting, but there are quite a few varieties to pick from now, which have made the plant much more appealing.
Yeah. What about violets?
African violets.
African violets.
I've been having a really hard time getting African violets. They seem to be in decline. I think they'll make a comeback. I still have customers that are looking for African violets, generally the older folks. Mm-hmm. So I hope a lot of those growers out there don't give up on African violets.
Yeah.
But for the first time, probably in 30 years, I had to go without African violets in the greenhouse about 2 months because nobody had them to sell.
Oh. And again, there's all kinds of information online and all the garden centers. Anybody who sells plants is happy to help people figure out what would be a good match for them and how to care for their plants. All right. Marcia Potash, lifelong gardener, working in greenhouses and nurseries for over 30 years. Thanks so much for coming in and sharing your knowledge of houseplants with us. We really appreciate that.
Thank you. It's one of my favorite subjects.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.